Elizabeth Barrett is a wife, mother, grandmother, licensed marriage and family therapist, educator, eavesdropper, and emotion worker. She uses all of these skills to address the subjects we all struggle with in this conversation with the reluctant therapist. Hello and happy Tuesday, Elizabeth.
Happy Tuesday, Hank.
What's happening?
It's a beautiful day. Life is going well. Things are, you know, I like things that are kind of smooth. But then, you know, in the back of my mind, I always think, smooth roads usually open up to rough roads and then back to smooth roads again. So I'm enjoying a smooth stretch right now. But thank you for asking.
Let's all hope for smoothness.
Yeah, continue hoping for smoothness. And my grandbaby is 4 months old as of yesterday. So that's kind of exciting. And I don't know. It's a nice time to be me, which I guess is all we can ever hope for.
Yeah, congrats.
Thank you. And I'm looking forward to today's conversation because it's a conversation we were supposed to have a month or so ago, but a few things happened. Cars got in the way, and we had to reschedule this conversation. But we're going to talk about our lives, our mental health, and health in general, and the idea of when it's not all in your head. Because for many people, the experience of health issues, mental health, or physical health can quite often be frustrating. You know, especially when it comes to mental health issues, it's very difficult to go into a clinician, a doctor, a psychologist, an MFT, whichever health professional you're going to see, and say, I'm just not feeling right. Things aren't going well. I'm feeling anxious or sad or lonely or depressed. Can't quite put my finger on it. And the challenge can be trying to come up with the right answer, maybe diagnosis, understanding of the symptoms to kind of figure out what is going on and to best find a path towards healing. And the struggle with our physical health can also be the same. Very rarely does anyone walk into a doctor's office and list their symptoms and the doctor says, oh, without a doubt, this is exactly what's going on with you. You know, there are a few things maybe we can test with a blood test for diabetes and the bigger concerns, or even when it comes to influenzas or colds, sometimes it's hard to know, you know, is this a viral or a bacterial infection? So there's a lot of guessing that goes into the work in our health. And in the mental health world, we call it the art of psychotherapy because it really isn't a medical science. As much as we'd like to align ourselves with the medical science, working with the psyche really is much more about that art of understanding a person from many facets, right? Their physical life, their personal life, their working life, their childhood life, all of those different areas of our lives that come together and impact us, and then we manifest them either in good mental health or mental health that's struggling. And so it's very difficult, if not impossible, to ever talk to one person and know exactly what's going on for them. And so what can happen is that people who finally get themselves to a place of wanting to seek out therapy or go in for a medical workup, quite often by the time they get in the door of that health professional, they're tired. They've already been feeling poorly for whatever reason for quite a long time, and they walk in the office, and maybe they've talked to other medical professionals or they've sought out other therapists, but by the time, or they've looked on the internet and tried to find answers there or talked to friends, you know, we generally don't have symptoms of distress and then immediately go seek help. Generally, we sit on those symptoms of distress for a while, and by the time we get in to talk to someone, we're quite often tired and worn out and feeling like we just want someone to give us an answer. And that really is what can set us up for trouble. Because if we walk into a healthcare professional's office, again, whether it's for mental health concerns or physical health concerns, and we are at the point of exhaustion where we just say, fix me, heal me, I don't have the energy to do it anymore, that can be the recipe for disaster. Because when we hand over our power, when we hand over our mental health and physical health and well-being to another individual, as well-meaning as they may be, as professional as they may be, handing over that power can get us into trouble because the person that we're handing our power over to does not know us as well as we know ourselves. We may have lost sight of how well we know ourselves. We may have become discouraged and not trust that we know ourselves. But ultimately, no other professional can know what goes on inside of us as well as we can know what goes on inside of us. And so really, in order to heal, it requires us being able to work in tandem with a professional or a healer of some sort and work together to find the answers that are most honest and resonate with us and not just the diagnosis or symptom response or guesses of the professional we're talking to. And here's why it's a struggle for therapists, clinicians, and clients, is that things take longer to heal than we want them to. Therapy is not a passive experience. You can't walk into a therapist's office. You can walk into a therapist's office and say, I'm depressed, heal me. And you're probably going to end up with a prescription more than anything else. But what you really have to do when it comes to therapy or healing of any sort is be active in that healing. And passive therapy doesn't work. And as a clinician, one of my biggest challenges was, how did I get my clients to reactivate their energy so that they can help to heal themselves? You know, if I say, hey, in order to work with this anxiety or this depression, you really need to get out and start moving. You know, you need to have an exercise program, or you need to do journaling, or it'd be really helpful to do yoga or to find a support group. You know, they're all doing assignments, they're active assignments in order to heal, because self-healing requires work on our part. But it's challenging to get people to trust that they have the answers themselves when they're tired or frustrated or feeling overwhelmed or feeling frightened. So the work of clinicians quite often is to help bypass that conscious defense mechanism and tap into that unconscious ability to heal. So our topic today is going to be about taking back the power in our healing and trusting ourselves when others want to tell us it's all in our head. I'm Elizabeth Barrett, and this is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You'll be invited to be part of our conversation, as always, 805-781-3875. You can also find out more information about the show on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist, our website, thereluctanttherapist.com. You can send me emails to elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, and you can podcast our shows if you want to subscribe through iTunes, The Reluctant Therapist, or visit kcbx.org under the News Talk tab. We're at the top there, and you can listen to previous shows. So today, I welcome to the studio Nancy Siegel.
Thank you, Elizabeth. It's a pleasure to be here.
Nancy, I'm glad we finally made it happen.
I know.
I'm so excited to finally get to meet you.
Me too.
But Nancy is a certified clinical hypnotherapist. She is a survivor of mercury poisoning. She's also an author. As long and many other things.
Yes.
You've been on television. You've been interviewed countless times. You have a large list of clients who have been able to heal themselves through working with you and also through hearing your inspirational story. The author of two books, Rising Above It mm-hmm. and Rising Above Mercury.
Yes. And I've been published in three other books, but one hit the bestsellers list. They're anthology books, and it's The Queen's Legacy and Thank God I, Volume 3, and Pain-Free Public Speaking.
So you have a very broad resume of experiences. But today I wanted to focus on your experience of healing and how you found your inner wisdom and found your inner strength and inner healer and brought yourself to where you are today, doing all of the writing and public speaking and work as a hypnotherapist. Why don't you start off telling us your story?
Okay, so it all goes back to in the early 90s, I moved to Hawaii, and I had been living here in the mainland, originally from Wisconsin. And I had started coming down with some symptoms, just vague symptoms, some symptoms of like bouts of fatigue, dizziness, nausea. And then it gradually grew worse to digestive disorders. I had rashes. I had my hair started to fall out. I had pains in my joints. I had a lot of stiffness. And, you know, I'd go to the doctors and they'd say, you know, we can't find anything wrong with you. So I'm like, okay. So about 7 years into this, it progressively got worse. And
so your health is deteriorating throughout the 7 years.
Exactly.
And how old were you at this time?
It started when I was 26.
So you're young and should be vibrant.
Exactly. And I couldn't, by the 7 years into it, I finally got diagnosed with fibromyalgia. And I had fibromyalgia. I don't have it anymore. But during that time, like, there were days that the doctors would say, you know, swim swim laps. That's the best, you know, that's the best you can do. And I'm like, okay. And I could, there were days that I couldn't even do 2 minutes of swimming and I'd be just exhausted. So while I was building my massage therapy practice and my hypnosis practice, I actually had became a certified hypnotherapist during that time around the 7 year mark.
So were you inspired to do the hypnotherapy certification because of your health issues or were they not connected at the time?
It wasn't connected at the time. I was doing massage therapy and I decided that hypnotherapy would be a complementary skill that I could add to doing massage, and I could, you know, cover all bases, the mind and the body. So I studied hypnotherapy, and shortly within that time, I wound up having paralysis in my legs, and it grew worse to severe rigidity and muscle spasming, and I was hospitalized for about a week. I had a whole array of tests done, and they couldn't find what was wrong with me.
Are they telling you there's nothing wrong with you at this
point? No, at this point, they just couldn't. Yeah, okay. They just couldn't pinpoint it. And they thought it was Guillain-Barré, you know, because it, like the paralysis started in my legs, and then sometimes it would go and affect my entire body. And then sometimes and it would come and go. And so about a month later, I wound up in the hospital again with paralysis, and this time that is when this muscle spasming and the rigidity was going full force. And they tested me again. I was in the hospital again for another week or so, and nothing came up. So by this time, they're like, we're not too sure that this isn't a conversion reaction disorder, which means it's all in your head. So
that is a DSM diagnosis, if people are curious.
Okay.
Diversion disorder is where we can't find anything wrong with you, so you must be creating this because of some psychological issue you have. It's coming out in your body.
Right. And granted, as a child, I had a very rough childhood, a rough life, actually. Mm-hmm. I grew up in poverty. I survived abuse, sexual, physical, mental abuse. I had a lot of loss in my life. My father died when I was 4 and many other losses. And when I was 16, I was so beside myself and stressed out and depressed, I tried to commit suicide at the age of 16. So, yeah. But through the years, I realized I have to work on myself. Mm-hmm. And I found my path, and I got better. And so I was, you know, on the uphill climb, and, you know, and then I decided to get, you know, my massage license. I was doing well. And then
so you had done all the psychological
work. Yes, I worked on myself. Yes. I did my work. And so I know that I'm like, something tells me I was following my gut instinct. And I said, no, something is not right with that diagnosis. There's something there. So because I had the hypnosis background, I worked with classmates and some of my instructors and other well-renowned hypnotherapists, and we did processes, and some clues that came up was that it started with the letter M, and that the doctor, there was something there and the doctors hadn't found it yet. Yet at this time, I really didn't realize what a big clue the M letter meant. I just thought MS because the symptoms were so similar. Mercury poisoning, it's a neurotoxin, and so it causes all these neurological problems, and it mimics a lot of neurological diseases and causes, you know, like Alzheimer's, and it can show up, it looks like MS or even diabetes and things of that, but all my tests came back okay. Fast forward another 7 years into it, I was in Las Vegas, and I was, during this time, I was in and out of hospitals. Doctors kept on telling me it was all in my head, and then I would get occasionally a wrong diagnosis. And I wound up at the Mayo Clinic with them saying, you know, it's all in your head. And I left there, and I was so frustrated by this time that I'm like, I'm just done with the doctors. And if I die tomorrow, I don't care. I know that there's something there. They just won't look any further. So I wound up going to a doctor. I was doing pretty good for about a year and a half, And I wound up having symptoms exacerbate. I wound up having spasming, and the paralysis came back full force. And so a friend of mine gave me a name to a doctor in Las Vegas who was just a integrated doctor, family practice, very unassuming. And a month later, I was in his office. He had looked through my medical records, and he was just like, these doctors are so ignorant. He goes, he spent about an hour and a half on my first visit with him. And he, on leaving, he said, we're going to test you for mercury poisoning. If it's not that, and he had a whole list of other things. And I just like said, okay. I had no clue about mercury poisoning. And this is back in 2003. And so I went, and he goes, before I left, he said, go get your fillings removed and I will test you for it when you come back. And so 2 weeks later, I was back in, and I he tested me, and I was off the charts. And that wasn't even at my worst time. I don't know what I was at my worst. And so, but all I knew was, like, I wanted to get it out. I was, you know, experiencing a lot of anger towards the medical profession at this point, as you can understand.
Because how many years into this are
12 years.
So 12 years of being told it's in your head. Mm-hmm. And
not taken seriously.
Right.
Looking at me like, you know, go see a psychiatrist. I'd go see the psychiatrist, and they'd say, well, I can't do anything for you. And so I was like, well, who's going to help me? So I had to help myself. And I looked for every option that I could. And then I found the right doctor. And that's, you know, part of the journey, too.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Nancy Siegel. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. We're talking about when it's not all in your head, and knowing when it's time to trust your gut. Mm-hmm. and to look for answers in that inner wisdom. Because Nancy's talking about her experience, 12-year journey of finally finding out that she had been suffering from mercury poisoning. And we're going to talk about how she found her healing post this diagnosis. We're also going to be opening up the phone lines in a little while, 805-781-3875. So you finally get the diagnosis.
Mm-hmm.
Are you all better? Do they just give you a pill and it all goes away?
I wish it was like that easy, but it took 2 years to get it out of my system.
2 years?
Yes.
Okay.
2 years. And it was through chelation. And I had to do very low levels because the least little thing would send me back having severe symptoms. So,
could they determine where the mercury poisoning had come from?
Yes, there's three different ways to test for mercury, and it depends on the exposure. They can test through the blood, the urine, or the hair. When it's through fish, and which was my case. I absorbed the fish intake, and I ate moderate amounts. I wasn't an overeater of fish, but it came from fish. I also had dental amalgams. So both of those are very, very, very toxic. And then also while I was sick, I had broken a thermometer in my bedroom, and I never cleaned it up properly. I had no clue at that time. You know, back in the late 90s, the internet wasn't around, and we didn't have, you know, the information that we have nowadays. So, yeah, it was through fish amalgams and the thermometer. So I got it three different ways. But he tested through a urine test, and we did chelation for 2 years.
And what is that for?
For those who don't know, chelation is when they can do it via an IV or pill form. And I took DMSA, which is, don't ask me to pronounce the word, but those are the initials of it. And what it does is it draws the heavy metals out of your body. And then your body has to assimilate it through the liver and through the kidneys. And it wreaks havoc on your body. It's a very strong medicine that is not to be messed with, but I had to take it. And then on top of it, it also draws out all the minerals and the things
you need.
Yes. And so I had, as I'm taking that, I also had to load myself up with enzymes and supplements. And it was just a never ending cycle. And I was just, by the end of it, I was just like so relieved to be finally at, you know, a non-measurable amount. But the one thing about mercury, if it crosses the blood-brain barrier, it's pretty much not going to come back out of your body, and it's very hard to get it out. So I believe that there is still some. I have what I call, instead of senior moments, I say Mercury moments, because mm-hmm. it's just like that.
Interesting.
Yeah.
And so how did you know you were better then?
A definite difference in my energy level. And of course, the symptoms started going away. After about 3 or 4 months, I thought I got I must be down to zero. And I was at a level 17, and that was high. But, I went back and I wanted to be retested. And so we did it after about 5 months. And I was only at a level of 12, and I'm not even near. And I'm just like, oh, my goodness, this is going to take forever. And it felt like forever. But the great thing, by that time, I was feeling so good. It feels like my fibromyalgia symptoms are gone, or at least most of them. I struggled with my energy, and even after the levels were cleared.
Somewhere.
And it attacks my endocrine system, unfortunately. Like my thyroid and my adrenals, I still struggle with that sometimes. And so I have to still address those on occasion.
How prevalent is mercury poisoning then? I mean, is it safe to say that everyone has some level of mercury poisoning?
There's a good chance. There's a very good chance. If you're eating fish, you definitely will have some type of level. When you eat fish or ingest it, 95% of the mercury gets absorbed by the body, and in 1 to 2 days, it's like in all the tissues.
So sushi eaters.
Oh, yeah. It doesn't matter if it's raw or cooked, by the way. A lot of people think you can cook it out. You can't. It's in the tissues. So if you're eating fish, and especially those who eat a lot of fish, you're going to have a high level. And the bad thing about it is that some people that will have high levels of mercury in their body will have little or no symptoms, and other people can have a low amount and have symptoms like mine. Mm-hmm. I was an extreme case. Somehow I miraculously survived it. Had I not had the training in hypnotherapy, I don't think I would have. I think I would have given up mentally.
If you're just tuning in, my guest is Nancy Siegel. She's an author, certified clinical hypnotherapist, and mercury poisoning survivor. We're talking about Nancy's healing of herself, after 12 years of frustration trying to get answers through the medical community. She finally had to tap into her own inner wisdom and trust her instincts that things were not as she had been told they were. They were not just in her head. And she finally was able to tap into her training as a hypnotherapist to help her with the healing process. And now, 12 years later, she has a thriving work. She is thriving work out in the community as a hypnotherapist, helping other people learn to rise above it all, to help be their own advocates in healing. We're going to continue our conversation, and we are welcoming your phone calls, 805-781-3875. If you have a question or comment you'd like to share with Nancy or myself, I'm Elizabeth Barrett. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. You can also contact us through our email, elizabeth@thereluctanttherapist.com, and our Facebook page. And Nancy, if people want to contact you, your email?
Well, my email is nancy@risingaboveit.com. And they can always check me out on risingaboveit.com as well.
All right. So let's talk about the role of your work as a hypnotherapist in your healing and how you've used it to help others.
Okay. So through my own experience, I can say that it takes a person to do the healing work. It's not good to just go to somebody and say, fix me. And I, by the way, make it in one session.
Which is what we said at the top of the show, was that what's a struggle for therapy or healing in general is that the timeline we give ourselves to heal is not usually realistic. The
right.
healing takes a much longer time. And as you said, after 12 years of struggling, it was a 2-year healing process. It wasn't 6 weeks or one
yeah.
course of antibiotics. It was 2 years. So it
yes.
took a lot of patience and perseverance
mm-hmm.
to stick with the healing.
Exactly. And the healing continues. You know, I still, I mean, I was emotionally raw for many years. And that's what sparked me to write about it, because I had to it was cathartic to get it out on paper and to share my story, because there are many other people out there like myself. So I'm all about helping people, and those people who commit to wanting to help themselves and do what is needed and suggested by me often have, you know, amazing, astounding results. Those who want, give me, like, people, the society has been conditioned, like, give me a pill and make it all go away. Mm-hmm. And unfortunately, if you really want to heal, it's not going to happen. So
and we also want to heal and still be able to work 60 hours a week and
do all of our and do everything that we do on a daily basis, but you have to
at the sideline, we're trying to heal.
Exactly.
It really sounds like it needs to take front and center.
Mm-hmm. It does. And unfortunately, people have to hit rock bottom before that happens oftentimes. And even then, they're still not ready to do it.
So hypnotherapy, yes. How does that work? How did that work for you?
Okay. So like I said before, I had many sessions with other therapists, and we covered all kinds of subjects. You know, we went back to healing the loss of my father, the healing the abuse, healing, changing my thought patterns and all of that. And through that, it changed my life. And so now I'm able to help other people. And sadly, I had to go through all that in order to do the work that I do now. But now I have people coming to me for an array of reasons, and not just like their physical health, but it's dealing with depression, dealing with anger, dealing with, you know, their sadness and their grief. And a lot of people are afraid to look inside themselves, but that's where it all starts. And it's not as big and bad and scary as most people think it is. It's actually, when people come to me, it's a great relief after they've had a session and they realize, like, okay, I didn't realize that was in me. Mm-hmm. And I didn't realize my mind was perceiving it that way. And that's why all these A, B, and C things happen to me. And now that can change. And it gives them the strength and the power and the courage to go out and do that.
So do you still incorporate the massage therapy, the body work with the hypnotherapy?
I don't do two at once.
Okay.
I keep those separate. I just prefer to do it that way. It's there's enough in the hypnosis sessions and then also in the massage therapy sessions. It's I'm busy working on the body, and I like to focus and keep my attention there. Although intuitively I can get things, I pick up on things from clients, and if it's strong enough, I'll ask them about it. And if it's, if the client seems open enough to that, we can talk about it.
So it seems there's a couple of things that stand out for me. One, going back to, your childhood, which was very traumatic, and you had done a lot of work on that. But it's also interesting to know that we have to revisit that work throughout our life, right?
Yeah.
That there's never a time that we really can cap it and say, I did that work and it's over. That it does revisit us.
It does. And it's like, there's a saying that it's like an onion. You just have to peel back the layers, and there's still more layers. And I will probably always, right now in my life, I feel like, oh, I'm healed. I'm so far away from that. But on occasion, certain things may trigger it. And I was just in Dallas learning a healing technique in Dallas, and something came up where they were just doing that. We were practicing on each other and doing the corrections, and something came up, and I'm like, and I started crying, and I'm like, oh, there's something there that we need to visit. Like, you brought something up in me. So we revisit it, and sure enough, it turned out something that happened to me at the age of 10. And I'm like, I did all
I'm
that
done
work.
With that.
I did all that work, but it came up again, and we just cleared it, and there it is. It's gone in the past, and I don't have to deal
until
with
the,
it.
And
until
maybe
the next time, maybe it won't ever come back again.
And that's the other part of therapy and the healing of our lives, is that we have to be willing to understand that our emotions and our life experiences are not static. Mm-hmm. Just as therapy is not passive, you can't go in and have someone heal you without you being willing to do work along with it. You know, whether it's nutritional or physical work or emotional work, mm-hmm. you have to be willing to tap in and find that inner thriving survival instinct in yourself in order to make these things work, and to also give ourselves grace in understanding that our stories of our childhood or our early child lives or our adolescent years, you know, all of those stories we carry with us. We never pack them away and leave the suitcase behind.
Yeah.
We carry it with us. And I like to use the metaphor of luggage, because we quite often like to say she carries or he carries a lot of baggage with them. Mm-hmm. Well, we all carry baggage. If we don't, then we didn't exist, because a life well lived hopefully has lots of things stored in our trunks and our baggage. Exactly. That we can tap into. But what is wonderful about therapies or hypnotherapies or any sort of healing work, body work, is it gives you a place to open up that baggage, right? To open up those suitcases and look at what you've been dragging along with you, mm-hmm. and then to pull it out, repack it. I like to think of, you know, using that vacuum sealer that makes things even smaller.
That's a great analogy.
Yes,
to
suck all the energy out of those things in our suitcases, and to repack them and make room for more mm-hmm. memories or more experiences. But we have to be willing to revisit those stories at different times in our life, especially if it was something like childhood trauma. You may work it out in, you know, at some point in your life, but then if you have children of your own, you will re-experience that childhood trauma through raising your own children. It just mm-hmm. is part of life. And we can deal with that if we are willing to say, hey, I know this is going to be an issue. I'm going to go there. I'm going to release it, or I'm going to look at it and let it be.
And it does get easier for people to deal with it.
Absolutely.
And, you know, like how I felt about my childhood in my 20s is completely different than I feel about it now.
And if you hadn't worked on it throughout your life, it would have gotten larger and more compact.
My life would have been a mess.
Yes.
And you know, I wouldn't be here today, and I would, God only knows where I'd be.
And that's why I, instead of handing over our power and our grief or our sadness or our trauma to experts and say, just numb it, right? Mm-hmm. That's kind of our protocol today, is that we numb these traumatic experiences through medications or through maybe over-exercising or overeating.
A lot of times people do look on the outside.
Yes.
You know, like, oh, well, I'm just going to go start working out, really, and then I'll feel better.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, you do. That's a great thing to, like, relieve all that stress and anxiety that may be attached to that. But you have to delve inside your psyche. And the only way to do that is to, one, of course, use hypnosis or something similar to that, meditations, guided imageries, anything. It's all the same thing to me. You know, if you're accessing your subconscious mind, where everything is held and all your beliefs and all your, you know, the subconscious mind doesn't know the difference between right and wrong, good or bad, and truth or lies. So it is very vulnerable. And it's reality to the subconscious mind. So that's why some of these fears that people have, they spring up and people don't know how to deal with it. And, you know, it can be easily changed around and changed.
It's why I love the movie Inside Out, because mm-hmm. it does a great job of showing how fluid our emotional system is and our memories and how things are stored in the body or in different parts of our psyche. And even though it's a cartoon, it's a beautiful visual to get in our heads to see that nothing is stuck and permanent as long as mm-hmm. we allow it to come forth. This is A Conversation with a Reluctant Therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest today is Nancy Siegel. You're listening to Public Radio KCBX. And we invite your phone calls, 805-781-3875. We're talking about mercury poisoning and the prevalence in our society and the healing from this that Nancy experienced, but also hypnotherapy. How does that work in the healing professions? And what is it about healing that's so such a struggle? You know, why are we allowing ourselves to buy the idea that life can be healed in a two-week pill? Or taking a pill for 2 weeks. We'd love to hear from you. 805-781-3875. Hi, Debbie, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Well, I wanted to say thank you to Nancy for bringing this out. And I had a similar journey. I struggled with thyroid issues from the time I was about 8, which was when I got my first measles, mumps, rubella injections. I had a lot of mercury fillings as a small child. And I was, I think, 42 before we figured out some of the things that were wrong. And but it was the same journey. I just kept, I knew there was something. I didn't know where it was. And I knew that if I kept seeking, I would find it. And I did. I did find it. And so ultimately, it was after I'd had a son who had some brain damage. And that was caused by the mercury poisoning. And it was a neuropsychiatrist at the Amen Clinic who said, who ruled everything else out and said, his nonverbal learning disability is caused by the in utero and breastfeeding when you had mercury poisoning.
And how long did it take you, Debbie, to find that diagnosis or who your original mercury poisoning diagnosis?
You know, I figured it out. And I figured it out because I had a client, actually. I'm a real estate broker, and I had a client who had had mercury poisoning, and I was having lunch with her one day, and I just said, you know, there's something wrong, and I don't know what it is. And she suggested that I look into that, and I had to insist that my doctor, actually my chiropractor, do a blood test, because he said, no, you've got yeast infection. I said, no, I don't. Test me, humor me. So finally, he humored me, and it came back, and he said, oh, my gosh, you were right. So,
and did you have a two-year process the same as Nancy?
It was similar, yes. I did go through chelation, and my son by that time was 7 or 8 years old, and he had some chelation as well. That took place over a couple of years, lots of the same vitamins and supplements and things. And I had all of my fillings removed, and very quickly after having them removed, I felt better. It was almost, I almost wondered if it was placebo, but it was so pronounced. If I would exercise just a little bit, the next day I would feel terribly hungover, and it was just an overload of toxins, and my body just couldn't tolerate it. And that changed almost immediately after getting the fillings out.
Well, I'm very glad you're doing much better, Debbie, and I'm so sorry to hear that your son had been exposed to that, but that often happens nowadays. There are studies out there that show that people are, like, especially women in their the ages that they can give birth, they are at high risk to that.
And then generally you're likely to have children who inherit that same sensitivity. And mm-hmm. so it creates a difficult situation. And I now have a note, a prescription note from my doctor, one for my son and one for me, saying under no circumstances should anyone in this family have any exposure to mercury. But it's still a constant battle with medical professionals because they look at us like we're kind of crazy.
Yeah, and unfortunately that is how many, many doctors look at it, and they don't take it seriously, and they're not educated. They've been misinformed. They want to blow it off and not deal with it because it's just not something that they're knowledgeable about.
Debbie, thank you for calling in. Yes.
Sure. Thank you. It's like lead poisoning. We know lead mm-hmm. poisoning is bad, and it surprises me that they can't figure out if we know how bad lead is, we know mercury is bad. How do we not link that up? Common sense.
Absolutely. Thank you, Debbie. And I think the frightening thing about the mercury poisoning is it's so prevalent in our society that once the lid comes off the pot, I think it's going to be challenging. Like, are you suggesting that everyone go in and have all their fillings taken out of
fillings? And what are we going to do about the fish?
Yes.
The fish isn't being tested. It's like we have all fish now is tainted with mercury. And there's many studies out there that even freshwater fish, and you know, no matter what the size of the fish, you know, and they have, it has levels of mercury, and oftentimes it exceeds the safe level, what they consider a safe level, which is even inaccurate itself. So
805-781-3875 is the number to be part of our conversation today. Fred, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Oh, good afternoon. A very interesting program. My wife has an undiagnosed skin problem that's been going on for nearly 4 years now. Been to UCLA, all the local doctors, all the local dermatologists, and people, as you just said, the doctors probably don't know what it is, and they just shrug her off. And I was wondering what advice I could give her to try next.
And you said you went to, are you in the L.A. area?
No, Santa Barbara.
Santa Barbara. Okay, so you're in the same area as myself. I know of a doctor in Ojai. I've never spoken to him, but Dr. Bernhard is in Ojai, and I know that if you want to go test the heavy metals and things of that nature, I've heard he is highly recommended, and I would seek out doctors that are integrated versus just strictly Western medicine doctors, because they are they've got the best of both worlds. We've got thousands and years of medical
knowledge
and treatments that work, and then we also have nowadays the modern medicine, which has only been around for 200 years. So,
I'm so glad you said that, because we did try all kinds of acupuncture, and there was one Chinese doctor that was visiting from China who gave my wife an herb concoction that was starting to work, and then he left back to China, and his son changed the formula, and her problem came back. And we said to the doctor, can you change it back? And he didn't know what his father had put together.
Mm.
So, friend, I'm sorry, because I think that's, you know, when we have chronic illnesses that go undiagnosed or unsuccessfully treated, that it starts to wear on our mental and emotional health as well. And I'm sure it's stressful for you as her husband not being able to find what she needs to get better. And that has to weigh on you.
It does.
So how are you caring for yourself?
Well, I'm very supportive to her. She likes light touch therapy. It seems to relieve a lot of some of the stress that she has from her skin problem. So I'm constantly caressing my wife or anybody what could ever be. But I was wondering if the hypnotherapy would be something that might help her find something in herself.
It's a good possibility that it could help her, yes. I myself can attest to that. Like, if not, you know, it's not going to find a diagnosis. That's not what I'm saying. But it could find other things that can be contributing to it, and also help her with the mental stress, the anxiety, the frustration that comes along with having a chronic illness. It could be very beneficial.
So how does Fred or anyone who's interested get in touch with you or to find out more about hypnotherapy?
You can email me at nancy@risingaboveit.com. And I also have a website, risingaboveit.com. And feel free to email me and ask me any questions. I'm open. And even if you want to get in touch, talk via phone, that's fine. You can email me first, and then we can go from there.
Thank you, Fred. I hope this helps out. And Don, you're on the air. What's on your mind?
Hi. Good afternoon, and really enjoy your program.
Thank you.
Your guest, what's being said here. I also had a health challenge journey, so my ears are wide open here. My question is, how did you discover the cause of your condition with hypnosis?
How did the hypnosis help?
Yeah, there was no...
How did you... Well, on the website, it says that by using hypnosis, I diagnosed my condition.
Oh, good. Thank you, Don.
It helped to diagnose my condition. It gave me clues to that it started with the letter M. And how that happened, I have no idea to this day. But somewhere, I can't explain it. Just, I was given the information. It started with the letter M, and that there was something there, and the doctors hadn't found it. So that's you know, was huge clues. At the time, I wasn't sure. I was just like, you know, okay, well, I'm going to trust my gut instinct, and trust my higher self, or wherever that information came from, And that's what kept me going all those years, because it was another 7 years before I was diagnosed with the proper diagnosis.
So the hypnotherapy helped you gain more confidence to push forward or to start trusting yourself.
Absolutely.
Thank you for calling in, Dawn. The number to be part of our conversation is 805-781-3875. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. My guest is Nancy Siegel. And we're talking about finding the confidence in ourselves to challenge the medical system or the mental health system that may be poking around or going down rabbit holes. And we start to become victims of a lot of well-intended professionals who really are lacking in enough knowledge. And you said something that really resonated with me, is that as well-intended as our medical professions are, they only really do have 200 years of information.
Exactly.
And we keep adding new information to this 200 diagnoses. But quite often, just as we add more information, we have information that is rapidly debunked. And so you might find yourself, you know, buying into a healing system that 2 or 3 years later is seen to be unhelpful. Or
yeah,
anyway,
it's changing all the time. Mm-hmm. How many times do we see like, oh, well, here's a new medicine that helps with this, or here's a new herb that helps with this.
But then here are the side effects, and here's the unintended consequences.
Exactly. Also, labs. I have to address the fact that on my second hospital stay, while they were looking for answers, they did test me for heavy metals. Unfortunately, I was tested wrong, the lab got it wrong, because the lab that the hospital used at that time was Quest, and Quest is a huge lab company.
I've had things done there.
Yes, and I found out through Dr. Jane Hightower's book. She's got a book out about mercury poisoning. She was a doctor that kind of unleashed this whole she was one of the first doctors that came out and talked about mercury poisoning. And she has said that Quest is known to not test properly for the exposure, type of exposure to mercury poisoning that somebody had. They test according to the occupational exposure. I didn't have occupational exposure, but I was still tested by their labs in that form. And that was back in 2007 that she came out and said that. So that means back in 1997, 98, when they did test me for heavy metals, I was tested improperly. And had I been tested correctly, it would have made a
– You would have saved many years.
Many years, and much frustration. And it was it made a huge difference. So
is there a recommended – again, we're sharing this information. So what can people request and ask for or start demanding if we're going to take our health into our own hands?
Yeah, it's tough. It's as a layperson going to the doctors, when I had mercury poisoning, it affected my cognitive ability. So my thought process was slowed to retarded. I had an IQ test done during this time, and my thought process was so low that I was shocked at it. And nobody it didn't take alarm with any doctors. I don't know why, but so it was hard for me to articulate, to even process what they were doing, how they were doing it. I knew I was inside, it was kind of screaming out, but yet my brain couldn't catch up. I had constant brain fog. Mm-hmm. And I would start talk in the middle of a sentence and I'd stop talking because I'd forget exactly what I was saying, and then I'd have to be reminded what I was saying. So when you're challenged with that on top of not feeling well and the stress and the frustration, it's hard to be proactive, and it's hard to defend yourself and stick up for yourself, because these doctors will, oftentimes say, I'm the boss and listen to me. And so it's good to have somebody advocate for you, some type of support system. It's so important, whether it's one person or two people, and as many people that you can get to support you is so important.
805-781-3875. This is a conversation with a reluctant therapist. I'm Elizabeth Barrett. If you're just tuning in, my guest is Nancy Siegel, certified clinical hypnotherapist, author of Rising Above It and Rising Above Mercury and Mercury Poisoning Survivor. Laurel, you're on the air. What's on your mind? Hi, Laurel.
Well,
are you there?
Hi. Hi. I just wanted to give a name. I live in Ojai and have worked with Dr. Robin Bernhoff. It's Dr. Bernhoff, not Bernhardt.
Okay, thank you. Thank you for correcting me.
Can you spell it?
Oh, he's a wonderful and compassionate doctor. People come to him in despair, and he is their staunch advocate. His number in Ojai is 805-640-0180.
And is
Robin Bernhoff.
Could you spell? Do you know how to spell the last name?
Oh yes, it's Bernhoft.
Great. Thank you so much, Laurel, for taking time to call. Because I'm sure a lot of people will be happy to have that information. Thank you. So let's talk about the hypnotherapist piece. You know, what kind of help can you provide people? Who comes to you seeking help? You know, and how can you? Because anxiety and depression are the big two, right? Mm-hmm. That people struggle with the most common disorders that come into medical offices and mental health offices. We have varied success in dealing with both. Some people have such chronic anxiety and depression that they give up on mm-hmm. even dealing with it, and then it starts to build and get worse. So where does hypnotherapy help, and how does it help in these cases?
Well, I work from very common things like stopping smoking, fears and phobias, you know, simple things like goal setting, to like complicated ones, you know, where people are struggling and they don't know what's going on, and like things are arising, it's hidden in the subconscious mind. So I have to weed through these emotions and figure out how best to approach it. And there's many ways that I can do it. Sometimes I use past life regression with it, and I find that to be very effective. Recently, I worked with a family member who I didn't know this, but he struggled with depression during his teenage years. And by the time he got to college, he had social anxiety, and he left school. He was only there a month. He left college and he went back home, and he had to go get a job and get some help from a therapist. And he was diagnosed with ADD, but he was still struggling with it. And they put him on the medicine, and he hated the medicine, and he was struggling with it more. It gave him more problems, more sleep problems. So I found this out it was like less than a year ago. And so I worked with him. He lives in Wisconsin. So I was there visiting, and I'm like, if he's open – you know, he's my nephew, and I care about him, I love him, I want to help him. And he was open to it. So we had a little session, and we approached his, like, not so much the depression portion of it, but like the underlying stuff mm-hmm. that, like, emotions, the like tapping into the emotions and finding out what's going on, and then other things like approaching the ADD, and then some other things, and he's thriving now. I mean, he's not he's getting the ADD under control, and he's doing much better. But he found so much benefit by accessing a subconscious mind versus just saying, here, take a pill and do some of these skills, you know.
The behavior modification skills.
Yeah, and, you know, that only goes so far because it's a much more deep-seated issue there.
Yeah, we're talking about the difference between managing symptoms, which is a lot of what we do now mm-hmm. in the healing professions, and actually healing the underlying cause of the symptoms.
Exactly.
So how does hypnotherapy work? Why does it work?
Well, it's a phenomenon. But it is scientifically shown that, like, the mind works. It's got the conscious and the subconscious mind. And when you access the subconscious mind and you reprogram it, just like a computer, it's like the computer is going to keep doing the same thing it's going to do until somebody goes in, the computer programmer, and reprograms it. Right. And so that's the same, basically, how the mind works. If you go into the subconscious mind, see what's going on, and let's reprogram it and to react a different way. And that all starts with our core beliefs. Our core beliefs create feelings, and then they create, you know, ultimately our actions and our results of our life. And so if that's cycling through our brain constantly and it's causing problems in whichever way, go in, access it, and it will – just the direct suggestion or some other type of techniques, visualization, works wonders. And I see it in my clients all the time.
So when we talk about a client who says, all right, I'm struggling with anxiety and I've gone down every route and I've given up and I'm going to try hypnotherapy, mm-hmm. Or maybe someone has shingles and they don't have any, you know, the doctors keep saying there's no more shingles in you, but they keep having outbreaks.
Okay.
So how does a client come in and present to you? Do you, you know, are they asleep? Are they awake? Are they having to access stories? And because for a lot of people, they're afraid to talk about or open up those areas.
Well, there is a underlying fear for most clients that come in that have never experienced hypnosis and are unfamiliar with it. And also Hollywood and movies don't help with the stereotype of it. But hypnosis is a natural state of relaxation.
Okay.
And so it's in the daydreaming state and then also into the theta state, which is where we go a little bit deeper and where we're having our dreams. And so you're in that state. You can always hear. What people don't realize is that the person that's being hypnotized, it looks as though they're unconscious and they're not hearing anything. But all they're seeing is a deeply relaxed body and a deeply relaxed conscious mind. And so this subconscious mind can hear everything, knows everything. In fact, the senses are heightened. It's a heightened awareness state. And sometimes we're adding just a direct suggestion will work. And other times going in and doing like a past life regression or some type of regression or dialogue. It's a gestalt dialogue. Forgiveness. It can be – I tell everybody's different, so I don't know what's going to come up.
Right, we don't know what's in your suitcase until you open it and look.
And so it can be stuff that like people are like, I never knew like that was there or I was thinking that. And it's just like – but that's what the mind holds, and that's why you have to dive into it. And it's not scary. I mean, it's not a scary place. It's not like, ooh, you're not going to be telling your deepest, darkest secrets or, you know, and it's not a truth serum or anything like that. So once people go in and have a session and they come out and they're like, there's a sense of relief. And I've worked to the extreme of doing like a exorcism on somebody with, you know, and who am I to say like if that was, you know, a demon actually was possessing this woman's body or if it was her imagination, but we are able to go have it go away.
Whatever that thing is that's underneath our conscious mind.
Yes.
And it is, hypnotherapy is a way of bypassing that conscious mind and tapping into the underlying story.
Exactly.
My guest today has been Nancy Siegel, author, certified clinical hypnotherapist, and mercury poisoning survivor. If you'd like any more information about Nancy, you can reach her
at nancy@risingaboveit.com, and risingaboveit.com is my website.
And we'll post some information on our Facebook page, The Reluctant Therapist. You can listen to previous shows at thereluctanttherapist.com or on iTunes. You can subscribe to our podcast or check out kcbx.org. I look forward to continuing our conversation next week, and I appreciate all of my listeners supporting Public Radio KCBX.